Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 4th of June, 2024. My name is Jake, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, which reports on a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Stuart Jeffrey and Christine Churchill, and read by Judith Piggott and Christine Churchill. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition. Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
In case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week range from 4:50 on Monday the 3rd of June to 4:47 on Sunday the 9th of June. And the sunset times will range from 9:16 on Monday the 3rd of June to 9:21 on Sunday the 9th of June.
City centre businesses have hit out at the number and impact of traffic measures being imposed on Oxford, warning the latest anti-car restrictions will kill off retail. Four of the trial traffic filters going live in November will be in central Oxford. The bus gates in St Cross Road, Thames Street, Hythe Bridge Street and St Clements will operate 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Oxfordshire County Council is also due to start a public consultation this autumn on expanding the Zero Emission Zone, ZEZ, to a wider area of the city centre. The council is also at the early stages of proposing a workplace parking levy, an annual charge to employers for workplace parking spaces, which was set out in a budget meeting at County Hall in February. They follow the introduction of low-traffic neighbourhoods in East Oxford and Cowley, which have been blamed for increasing congestion on surrounding roads. The filters will use ANPR, automatic number plate recognition cameras, to catch private car drivers on short sections of the roads. Any driver going through a filter who is neither exempt nor holding a permit will be issued to a £70 fine. Permits will be available for blue badge holders, health workers and care workers. All other vehicles, including buses, coaches, taxis, vans, mopeds and HGVs will be allowed at all times. It is hoped the restrictions will reduce the number of private cars and encourage walking and cycling. Just over 1,800 people signed a petition over worries that the filters in Thames Street and Hythe Bridge Street will make Botley Road the main access route from the west. All traffic for Oxford Rail Station, Oseney Mead, the new Oxpens development and the Westgate Shopping Centre would be funnelled through Botley. Meanwhile, more than 3,400 people signed a petition against deploying filters at Marston Ferry Road and Holloway in Cowley. These two will only operate at peak times and not on Sundays, following feedback after 5,700 people gave their views in a consultation on the filters in 2022. Hotelier Jeremy Mogford has said the traffic filters will be a catastrophe for Oxford and would send out a horrific negative message to the world at large about Oxford being inaccessible. He added, "It looks like the mission is to eliminate the car from the city." Oxfordshire residents outside the Oxford permit area can apply for 25 day passes each year. Mr. Henwood said he would be proposing a motion at full council that proposed 2024 Oxford local plan be rejected in its present form until traffic restrictions are lifted. Oxfordshire County Council said it hoped traffic filters would speed up buses with new services and electric buses. A spokesman said, "We expect it to get much easier to travel into the city by bus, as existing bus services should be faster and more reliable, and new bus services will be added. The roads should be quieter, making it easier for those with permits or exempt vehicles to travel around, as well as people on bike or foot. Everywhere in Oxford..."
An anti-LTN campaigner running to be the next MP for Oxford East says he thinks he can win the seat. David Henwood is a councillor for the Independent Oxford Alliance, IOA, party, representing the Rose Hill and Iffley ward, and was elected on a platform opposing controversial traffic policies in the city. He will be putting up a challenge to the incumbent Labour MP, Annalisa Dodds, to win the seat as an independent, covering wards ranging from Cowley to Blackbird Leas, as well as the city centre. This comes following suggestions of a shake-up in the political map of Oxford, as the IOA was among those celebrating gains in the local elections earlier this month. Mr. Henwood is not running as a candidate for the IOA, which says it has not put forward any candidates for the general election that will take place on the 4th of July. Speaking of his candidacy, the Oxford candidate said, "I am confident we can put a serious challenge to Annalisa Dodds, and I actually think if I work my socks off, I can win this, but it will be on the doorstep as an independent. I am steered by what the community wants." Mr. Henwood previously stood as an independent candidate in the last general election, but managed to secure just 0.5% of the vote, compared to Ms. Dodd's 57%. When asked about his electoral vision, the independent hopeful said he was advocating for better connectivity and a review of the LTN scheme. In addition to wider political policies, Mr. Henwood said he was disappointed with Labour's view on Palestine and claimed the Labour incumbent's views were inconsistent with the views of the people in Oxford. He added, "When it comes to giving aid, I think the best form we could do as a country is use our British engineers to reinstate some of the infrastructure that's desperately needed." Speaking of his personal background, Mr. Henwood said he was born in a military hospital in Colchester as his father was serving in the army, but then he came back to Oxford at the age of one and lived there ever since, apart from spending 20 years in Japan. He said he found city projects such as plans for the new Osney Bridge wasteful, and that he would ask the council to review the Oxford local plan to reintroduce employment sites to take up future housing need. Other candidates for the seat in Oxford East are Green, Sushila Dahl, Labour, Annalisa Dodds, Liberal Democrats, Theo Jupp, Reform UK, Lawrence Haar, SDP, Benjamin Adams, Independent, Amir Steve Ali. We approach Ms. Dodds for comment.
Jewish academics and staff at the University of Oxford have spoken out in support of students and others protesting for Palestine. In an open letter, 12 staff members said they were all deeply disturbed by the conflation of criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. The group also said it was deeply proud of the Oxford students, many of them Jewish, for their actions in solidarity with the international student movement for Palestine. The letter said, "All of us are deeply disturbed by the rising tide of rhetoric conflating criticism of Israel's war in Gaza with anti-Semitism, and by the use of this rhetoric to justify government interference in higher education and repression of student protest, all under the pretext of protecting Jewish students and staff." The open letter, published on May the 27th, said the group of Jewish faculty, staff and emeriti at the University of Oxford had wide-ranging political persuasions, cultural backgrounds and degrees of religious identification and observance. The letter read, "Some of us teach and do research on Jewish history, the Holocaust or Israel. Others have nothing to do with Jewish themes in our professional lives. As we write, the International Court of Justice has ordered Israel immediately to halt its assault on Rafah in order to safeguard Palestinians' right to be protected from acts of genocide. As Jews, as educators, and as human beings, we stand with them." The letter also disputed a statement from Oxford University, which said the protesters had created a deeply intimidating environment for many members of our community, including our Jewish students and staff, and members of the local Jewish community. The open letter said, "This is not our experience." It is also not our experience that the Oxford administration has been open to dialogue with members of the Jewish community who are supportive of the encampment. When some of us reached out to you recently to propose a conversation, you ignored our offer. We therefore object to the university's reductive and misleading claims to speak on our behalf. The characterization of Jews as a uniform mass with a single viewpoint is itself a common and insidious anti-Semitic trope. The authors implored the university to listen to and learn from the students who had been calling for the institution to reckon with its complicity in the catastrophe unfolding in Gaza. A university spokesperson advised that, on receipt of the letter, the vice-chancellor reached out to the authors with a request to discuss.
Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust has been recognised as a top recruiting site for a revolutionary psychosis study. The recruitment has been to bolster research about the presence of pathogenic antibodies in the blood of people with psychosis. The prevalence of pathogenic antibodies in psychosis study takes a closer look at specific antibodies which have the potential of being mistakenly created by the immune system and is showing exceptional results. The Oxford Health team has one of the highest recruitment rates to this study nationally. The mental health research and delivery team has been gathering blood samples from patients exhibiting psychotic symptoms. If these patients test positive for these particular antibodies, they become suitable for the SYNAPS2 study, which is trialing an immunotherapy treatment aimed at targeting these antibodies as a way of treating psychosis. Compared to standard NHS antibody testing, the new method utilises a different cell arrangement technique to provide more accurate results. The study could help to discover causes of psychosis that traditional psychiatric treatments are not able to treat.
Oxford has been ranked 10th in a prestigious listing analysing the world's 1,000 biggest cities from best to worst. The Oxford Economics Global Cities Index 2024 compares cities across the world based on five factors: economics, human capital, quality of life, environment, and governance. There are 21 UK cities in the top 200, including Oxford, Leeds, Manchester and Liverpool, but only 5 make the top 100. All the UK cities were ranked 72nd for governance, but their scores in the other four categories varied wildly. Oxford ranks 130th in the Oxford Economics Global Cities Index and is the 10th highest placed UK city in the table. It ranks 175th for economics, 167th for human capital, 163rd for quality of life, and 294th for environment. The economics score takes into account GDP, among other things. The human capital score is calculated using factors including population growth and educational attainment, as well as the quality of life rankings. Housing expenditure, recreation and cultural sites are also factors in addition to the environment. Leading the rankings in 2024 is New York, followed by London. Both cities perform best in the economics and human capital categories, unsurprising given their roles as global hubs for finance, business and education. New York has the largest metro economy in the world, and London has the fourth largest.
His Dark Materials author, Sir Philip Pullman, formally opened Exeter College Library following a multi-million pound restoration and transformation project. The Victorian Library was designed by Sir George Gilbert Scott in the neo-Gothic style, and originally opened in 1857. Over the decades, it has been the heart of an academic life at Exeter College for generations of students, including celebrated authors of Sir Philip, J.J.R. Tolkien, Alan Bennett, Sir Martin Amis, Tariq Ali, athlete and neurologist Sir Roger Bannister, and former president of Ghana, John Kafur. More recent former students include Turner Prize-winning artist Helen Martin, BBC journalist Rita Chakrabarty, and Sanchia Berg, and actress and writer Imogen Stubbs. Following a year of restoration and renovation work, the library reopened to Exeter students at the start of the academic year. It is now fully accessible, and the lighting, electrics, ventilation and environmental performance of the building have all been significantly improved. The stonework, woodwork and oak bookcases have been restored, and there is new woodwork, such as in the new mezzanine floor in the library annex. Outstanding craftsmanship has ensured that it's sympathetic to Gilbert Scott's vision. Head of Exeter College, Professor Sir Rick Traynor, said, "The library has substantially more reading spaces and better accommodation for library staff than it did before the construction began. Also, the building now has a lift and modern services fit for the digitised work of early 21st century students." In parallel, there has been an emphasis on restoration. Not only is the stonework in much better shape than before, the interior of the library, with cluttering modern bookcases removed, has much more of the air and light that Gilbert Scott intended, complete with restored historic bookcases and the great bulk of existing books back in place. It is now named the Jackson Library, in honour of the father of the project's principal donor, William Jackson, who came to Exeter College to read geography in 1983. Sir Philip, an alumnus and honorary fellow of the college, said, "Look up Exeter College Library online and you will see the sort of technology that, in the words of Arthur C. Clarke, is indistinguishable from magic. All that information at the stroke of a few keys on your phone. We should be walking about in a continuous state of wonder. You can sit at home in Argentina or New South Wales and read medieval manuscripts held safely in the archives of Exeter College in the comfort of your own pyjamas. Libraries are about books. Books are their heart and soul and mind and spirit. The library of any place of learning is the engine room, the treasure chamber, the nursery, the seed bed, the well of inspiration, the arsenal, the kitchen garden, the beacon, the lighthouse, the workshop, the glory of the past, the present and the future.
Several Oxford buses will no longer stop at the city centre railway station due to health and safety concerns. Both the 1 and 14 stagecoach services have been diverted until further notice due to fears over the trees at the city's rail station. The bus company revealed on Tuesday that multiple bus stops have been closed as a result of the concerns. A spokesman for Stagecoach said, "We have been told that due to health and safety concerns regarding the trees at the forecourt, Oxford rail station, some bus stops have had to close. Therefore, during this time, Service 1 and Service 14 will not be able to serve the R2 to R4 bus stops. We apologise for any inconvenience they may cause, albeit out of our control. Service 1 will drop off and pick up at a temporary bus stop at the end of the forecourt towards the exit. Service 14 will terminate at Frideswyde Square bus stop R8 and will depart from Frideswyde Square R7.
Plans to build 121 homes, which amassed hundreds of objections, have been refused once again, prompting relief from objectors that their delightful traffic-free neighbourhood is safe. The proposal to construct 121 homes and an 80-bed care home on land at Bayswater Farm on the outskirts of Oxford near Sandhills was submitted to both South Oxfordshire District Council and Oxford City Council. South Oxfordshire District Council refused the application in April, but councillors in the city also gave consideration to the proposal at a planning meeting, as two small sections of land included in the plans lay within Oxford's border. Labour councillor Alex Hollingsworth said of the proposed development site, "Sandhills is a delightfully designed LTN, low traffic neighbourhood. Obviously, this would make it a much less of a LTN. I am just curious about how many people who live in Sandhills don't realise it's one of the hated LTNs." This comes as objections were raised to the application on the basis it was lacking in surrounding active travel options due to the only route out being a main road. Committee member Louise Upton also said after the meeting there were local worries about increase in traffic along what are currently very quiet roads. Labour councillor Mary Clarkson, also on the planning committee, added, "Virtually all of the development site is in the South Oxfordshire district. This was refused mainly on access grounds. In terms of cars, there are just those two routes out onto the A40, and so there are undoubtedly more challenges in encouraging active travel. It's definitely more of a challenge to promote active travel when you don't have decent bus services, and you'll need to have a decent bike to be able to cope with those hills." Referring to Mr. Hollingsworth's comparison with Sandhills and Oxford's LTN, Ms. Clarkson said, "There are no real cut-throughs in Sandhills. You can only get in and out on the same route. Connectivity is pretty limited, so you go there as a means to just go to your house rather than using it to go elsewhere. Why would you go other than to visit Sandhills?" Labour Barton and Sandhills ward councillor Mike Rowley said he agreed all of the estates were effectively low traffic neighbourhoods. Mr. Rowley said, "There's low traffic and it means it's easy for kids to walk to school." Meanwhile, Cowley Ward Independent Oxford Alliance councillor Ian Yateman has shared his thoughts. Mr. Yateman said, "It's misdirection to label areas designed with no through road as being the same as closing historic through roads. Sandhills, with its poor public transport provision and household car ownership of 90%, hardly seems something to aspire towards. A planning paper had said of the application, "The substantial area of open space will include an extensive network of routes which connect into the wider pedestrian and cycle network. It will also promote interaction between the new and existing community, as well as health and well-being."
Blenheim Palace has launched a new interactive space as it works to support bees and educate visitors about the importance of the pollinators. The Woodstock Palace's walled garden now houses the Rouse Honey Beehive. It is part of an ongoing conservation project taking place between Blenheim Palace and Rouse Honey. The collaboration has also involved the planting of wild flowers throughout the Blenheim estate and palace gardens. The initiative aims to attract a greater diversity of pollinators and wildlife. The beehive allows families to learn about bees, hedgerows, and how best they can plant the best varieties of pollinators in their own gardens. Children have access to a workbench made from Blenheim oaks inside the hive, where they can create their own miniature bees and fill in colouring sheets. They can also climb steps to look out for pollinators in the palace's potager garden. Roy Cox, managing director at Blenheim Estate, said, "The beehive is the latest stage in our ongoing partnership with Rouse Honey, which aims to enhance and expand habitats for pollinators across the estate, creating a natural environment where wildlife can not only survive, but thrive." He added, "In the UNESCO World Heritage Site, we are fortunate to care for part of Oxfordshire, which has remained relatively untouched for centuries. This makes it a haven for native pollinator species, which can forage on the estate's extensive natural flora and wild flowers." Libby Nicholson, brand manager at Rouse Honey, added, "Bees are a vital part of our natural ecosystem, pollinating around 3/4 of the food crops we eat, including many types of fruit, vegetables, and seeds. However, the sad truth is that many pollinator species are in decline here in the UK, which means we need to act now." She added, "Together with Blenheim, we're working to inspire kids and grown-ups to join us on our mission to protect bees and other pollinating insects for future generations. Our Rouse Beehive provides a fun and interactive space for visitors to learn about the important work carried out by these amazing creatures. Across the wider Blenheim estate, there are also opportunities to discover the impact our Hives for Lives partnership is having on the local area, including 27 new log hives and over 50 acres of nectar-rich wildflowers for the bees to enjoy. Admission to the Rouse Honey Beehive is included within Blenheim Palace ticket, and including an annual pass or a privilege pass. Blenheim has a range of events and exhibitions taking place this year as it celebrates 150 years since it became the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill.
A team of cyclists visited about 100 pubs in and around Oxford in one day. Ash Sally Chadusama and his friends decided it would be fun to visit as many pubs as possible in the area and completed the journey on Saturday. They started out at the Marsh Harrier in Cowley and finished at the City Arms in Cowley Road. Mr. Sally Chadusama said, "In the end, we visited all 103 pubs within the ring road. We got off and touched the wall of each and took a selfie at each. We started at 11:30 a.m. and finished at 9 p.m, including stops for lunch and dinner, as well as a couple of punctures that needed repairing. We started at the Marsh Harrier as 4 cyclists and ended at the City Arms as 3 cyclists. We covered 36.3 miles, and once you take out all the stops, it was about 4.5 hours of cycling." Mr. Stanley Chidasama, 33, went on the ride with Ivan Urbai Souza, 32, from Wolvercourt Green, and Matt Ishtbarnard, 34, from Eastbourne. The idea for the tour was prompted by Mr. Stanley Chudasama's love for local pubs. He added, "I've lived in Oxford for about 5 years and love the pubs we have here. We're really spoilt for choice, not just in terms of drinks and decor, but history too, from famous writers to politicians' shenanigans. I've got my own spreadsheet of my Oxford pub rankings as a result, and a favourite pub for each season. I wanted to visit every pub in the Ring Road, as there's lots I've not been to. I thought it would be a fun challenge to visit all in one day and have a drink in each. As I started mapping them all out, I quickly realised that would be impossible. There are roughly 100 pubs and bars." He added, "Looking at the quickest route between them, I realised it would have to be done on a bike. So I came up with the idea of cycling to them all, physically touching each pub and getting a photo outside. The cyclists particularly enjoyed their pub ride, as Oxford United fans were out in force to cheer their team on for their playoff final against Bolton Wanderers at Wembley."
A last-ditch attempt to save the Oxford Artisan Distillery has been launched by an action group after it was announced it will move to a bigger factory in Yorkshire. Shareholders were told last month that a distillery known as Toad will be difficult to develop given its physical footprint near South Park in Headington. The plans will see Oxford's first ever distillery, launched in 2017, move to a larger facility in the north of England to increase its production capacity. However, residents, businesses, MPs and the distillery's founder, Tom Nicholson, have backed the Friends of Toad group in an effort to stop the move. The group wants to see the artisan spirits business stay open and has approached the distillery with plans to save it. Mr. Nicholson, who spent 10 years creating the distillery but stepped down from his board position in 2022, said, "Oxford has birthed many proud firsts during its long and illustrious history. It was a great achievement launching Toad, the first ever distillery in Oxford. It's become a much-loved venue, visitor attraction and brand, and it would be a great loss to the city and its residents if it disappeared forever. The distillery has been a resounding success in Oxford, promoted and helped by the city and its people. We fully understand the need for the business to scale up elsewhere, but that's no reason to abandon Toad. We will continue to seek a future for Oxford's distillery." Toad opened in 2017 with the support of local authorities, the university, businesses and individuals. In 2022, its Oxford Rye Dry Gin was launched into more than 150 Waitrose stores. The distillery in Cheney Lane, which also manufactures whisky, told its shareholders the move is also due to fair and reasonable restrictions imposed by the Oxford Preservation Trust covenants and Oxford City Council planning requirements. Annalise Dodds, MP for Oxford East, said, "Residents in my constituency are very proud of the Oxford Artisan Distillery brand and its location in South Park in the heart of our vibrant and historic city. As such, many of them have written to me to ask whether anything can be done to preserve the distillery's future in Oxford." Businessman Matt Broadway, who is campaigning to keep the distillery in Oxford, said, "We think there is every reason to keep Oxford's distillery open. The current owners should allow us to preserve this excellent homegrown business while they focus on their new ideas elsewhere." Restaurateurs Bernadette and Paul Petrillo of Branca in Walton Street said, "We've been stocking Toad spirits from way back when. They epitomise all that is good about small business. If they're not somehow able to work out a way of keeping the distillery going, it would be a huge loss to Oxford." The decision to move follows investment from Distill Ventures, part of Diageo. A briefing to shareholders says staff will leave the Oxford site at the end of 2024, when the company will cease to trade as the Oxford Artisan Distillery. It is understood the Oxford name will disappear from its whisky and its English rye will be called Fieldon Whisky. The company will continue to make some gin to reflect its Oxford roots under the new plans. It would work with Woods Brothers Distillers, a small farm distillery in West Oxfordshire, to continue to make its heritage grain-based, grain-neutral spirit, and then use this as a base for its supply of physic gin and Ashmolean gin to the Oxford Botanic Garden and Ashmolean Museum.
Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust has been recognised as a top recruiting site for a revolutionary psychosis study. The recruitment has been to bolster research about the presence of pathogenic antibodies in the blood of people with psychosis. The prevalence of pathogenic antibodies in psychosis study takes a closer look at specific antibodies which have the potential of being mistakenly created by the immune system and is showing exceptional results. The Oxford Health team has one of the highest recruitment rates to this study nationally. The mental health research and delivery team has been gathering blood samples from patients exhibiting psychotic symptoms. If these patients test positive for these particular antibodies, they become suitable for the SYNAPS2 study, which is trialing an immunotherapy treatment aimed at targeting these antibodies as a way of treating psychosis. Compared to standard NHS antibody testing, the new method utilises a different cell arrangement technique to provide more accurate results. The study could help to discover causes of psychosis that traditional psychiatric treatments are not able to treat.
A general election candidate has criticised the lack of NHS dentists in the region, saying many children and adults are missing out on the vital service. Leila Moran, who has served as MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, has backed plans to end dental deserts, as figures reveal more than 40% of local children did not see an NHS dentist in the last year. This comes as the Liberal Democrats have unveiled a manifesto policy aiming to give free dental checkups to children and new mothers on the NHS. Ms. Moran said, "It is a national scandal that children's teeth are left to rot and people are forced to carry out their own dental work. Dentists are working exceptionally hard in very difficult circumstances to deliver the vital care people need." She added, "Instead of a temporary filling, we need a proper rescue package for dental health care." Figures reveal 4.5 million children in England didn't see an NHS dentist last year, with 143,840 children, specifically in Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire. The statistics don't improve for adults, with 61% of adults in the same three counties, or 747,618 people, not having seen an NHS dentist in the 2 years from June 2023. Ms. Moran pointed to the importance of adequate dental care, highlighting that tooth decay was the most common reason for hospital admission in children aged between 6 and 10 years. Since 2018, more than 100,000 children across the country have been admitted to hospital with rotting teeth. Ms. Moran said she had questioned the Health Minister on the lack of access to NHS dental care in Oxfordshire in Parliament earlier this year. She said she raised the case of one constituent who had contacted a dozen dentists, none of which were providing NHS dental care. The minister claimed in her response that the situation is improving. The Liberal Democrats' proposed plan to end dental deserts would include introducing an emergency scheme to guarantee access to free NHS dental checkups in England and Wales for those already eligible: children, new mothers, those who are pregnant, and those on low incomes. The party also hopes to bring dentists back to the NHS from the private sector by fixing the NHS dental contract and using flexible commissioning to meet patient needs. The Department of Health and Social Care and the NHS were contacted for comment but failed to respond. The other candidates for Oxford West and Abingdon are Conservatives Vinay Raniga, Labour Stephen Webb, Green Cheryl Briggs, Reform UK James Gunn.
An Oxford MP has been put on the spot by J.K. Rowling after being asked what her definition of women is. Speaking to Emma Barnett on BBC Radio 4's Women's Hour back in 2022, Oxford East MP Annalisa Dodds struggled to define what a woman is in light of listeners' concerns about the push to change the term's meaning. Ms. Dodds claimed that there were different definitions legally around what a woman actually is, listing the biological definition, legal definition, and all kinds of things. In a post on X, formerly Twitter, the Harry Potter author criticised the Labour MP's response. She said, "Like a lot of people who'd very much like change and also believe women's rights must be protected, I'd love to know how Labour defines woman in the context of a general election." The 58-year-old has frequently faced criticism for her views on transgender rights. The author first spoke out about her views in December 2019 when she spoke openly in support of researcher Maya Forstater, a visiting fellow in the Centre of Global Development, whose contract was not renewed after she made several anti-trans posts on social media. She continued to discuss gender issues and trans rights on social media since then, even reportedly donating £70,000 to an anti-trans group's long-running battle over the legal definition of the word woman. Ms. Dodds has yet to respond.
A professional shoplifter has been spotted filming himself, offering people 70% discounts at Bicester Village. Posting on TikTok, the prankster could be seen offering discounts and trying to tempt shoppers and security alike. The video titled Bicester Village Deals has gone viral online. In the minute and a half clip, the man approaches a security guard and asks, "Are you shoplifting?" To which the guard responds, "No. I'm a professional shoplifter. Is there anything you want from the village? I'll give you 70% off," the prankster adds. The Bicester Village prankster, Lloydie Lloyd, has a large following online.
A fully accessible version of Oxford's popular walking tour is set to start. Oxford Bus Company has collaborated with charity Unlimited Oxfordshire to create an inclusive experience for wheelchair and mobility scooter users. Unlimited Oxfordshire assists disabled people and their carers, bringing their issues to the councils. The all-accessible tour begins on the 31st of May, and City Sightseeing's Oxford guides will facilitate it if guests with walking disabilities join. The tour lasts 45 minutes and utilises the city's lowered curbs and ramps, ensuring those with mobility challenges can safely participate. It showcases Oxford's main attractions, identical to the standard tour. Luke Marion, Managing Director of City Sightseeing Oxford, said, "We're pleased to be able to make our walking tours more accessible to people with mobility challenges, so that more people can enjoy them. Making our walking tours more accessible to people forms part of our overall vision to ensure Oxford provides a world-class welcome to everyone."
Former Lord Mayor of Oxford, Councillor Lubna Arshad, has written exclusively to readers about her year in the role. "The last year has been one of the proudest of my life. I grew up in Oxford, I live and work in Oxford, and my kids go to school in Oxford. Representing the city and its people as the Lord Mayor of Oxford would have always been a huge honour, but to do so as the first Muslim woman, the first woman of colour, and the youngest person ever to hold the position has been extraordinary. The year has gone by extremely fast. My evenings and weekends have been packed with school visits, charity fundraising events, and official openings. I've had the privilege of meeting people from across Oxford and our twin cities, and of raising money for Humanity First, Oxford Community Action and Asylum Welcome. One of the highlights of the year was meeting Year 3 pupils at New Marsden Primary School. For me, it was inspiring to hear them talk so passionately about tackling the climate emergency, but I hadn't expected that seeing me wearing Oxford's mayoral chains and a hijab would also inspire them. Several expressed a newfound belief that they, too, could aspire to leadership roles, which was profoundly humbling. Another highlight and a massive shock was winning a SHE award for my contributions to Oxford's community. The award now has pride of place in our living room. But the year also brought many challenges. The biggest of these came after Hamas's terror attack on Israel and the subsequent invasion of Gaza. I believe in love for all and hatred for none, and I have tried to use my time as Lord Mayor to call for peace and an end to violence. I was proud to invite Dr. Hussam Zomlot, head of the Palestinian Mission to the United Kingdom, to address full council in March about the urgent humanitarian crisis in Gaza. And I also organised a peace workshop at New College, which brought together people of all faiths from our city to discuss and build for peace. In its 800-year history, no one like me has ever been Lord Mayor of Oxford. I think I felt the weight of the chains of office a little more than some of my predecessors, but I tried to be a visible and vocal advocate for all Oxford's residents. I hope I have inspired other people like me to seek leadership positions in Oxford, and I hope that I don't hold my title as the youngest and only Muslim woman Lord Mayor in Oxford's history for long. Having met many of Oxford's schoolchildren over the last year, I'm sure I won't.
Two young men will cycle over 640 miles to Paris and back to raise money for a suicide prevention charity. Jay Pierce, 22, from Headington, will team up with his best friend, Zach Andrews, 19, from Didcot, in aid of the Campaign Against Living Miserably, CALM. Both live in Oxfordshire's Young People's Supported Accommodation Service for 18 to 24-year-olds in need of safe accommodation and specialist support. The service supports over 100 residents, offering trauma-informed youth work in safe spaces. It comes after Mr. Pierce survived his own suicide attempt and emergency admission to hospital in Christmas 2023. Afterwards, he decided to jump on his bike, literally, and do something about it. The pair are aiming to raise £5,000 for CALM, a charity dedicated to preventing suicide, a matter which sees an alarming 125 people in the UK lose their life each week. They are currently calling upon the community of Oxfordshire to contribute to their online crowdfunding initiative. To prepare for their journey, Summertown Cycles have lent a helping hand in providing them with necessary cycling equipment, which notably includes a puncture repair kit. For more information about the fundraiser or to make a donation, visit the Just Giving page.
The University of Oxford has been awarded £5 million to support its cardiovascular disease research over the next 5 years. The funding has been provided by the British Heart Foundation and will bolster the university's research within this field. Professor Keith Channon, head of the Radcliffe Department of Medicine, said, "The British Heart Foundation Research Excellence Award underscores the scale, scope and quality of our research in heart and circulatory diseases. The new funding will support cross-disciplinary initiatives that will benefit patients by linking biological discovery science with data science and physical sciences and will help to train the next generation of new research leaders." British Heart Foundation Field Marshal Earl Alexander, Chair of Cardiovascular Medicine at the University of Oxford, led the bid for the award. Professor Angela Russell, Professor of Medicinal Chemistry at the University, co-led the bid and added, "We are delighted to receive this new British Heart Foundation award, which will allow us to build our connections with industry partners and to pioneer a new entrepreneurship and innovation training program to accelerate the development of future diagnostics and treatments for cardiovascular diseases." The Oxford Award forms part of a broader £35 million injection into UK cardiovascular disease research by the British Heart Foundation. Professor Brian Williams, Chief Scientific and Medical Officer at the British Heart Foundation, said, "We're delighted to continue to support research at the University of Oxford addressing the biggest challenges in cardiovascular disease. This funding recognises the incredible research happening at Oxford and will help to further its reputation as a global leader in the field. With generous donations from our supporters, this funding will attract the brightest talent, power cutting-edge science, and unlock life-saving discoveries that can turn the tide on the devastation caused by heart and circulatory diseases. The funding will support researchers in developing new tools and techniques, including artificial intelligence, to analyse clinical and imaging data related to cardiovascular disease. It will also aid the testing of new drug treatments from research discoveries and methods of smart drug delivery. The Research Excellence Awards were launched in 2008, and Oxford has received more than £20 million through this scheme so far. Past projects supported by the scheme include creating an artificial intelligence tool to detect heart attack risks years in advance. This tool is currently being piloted at 5 NHS hospitals. The money also supported the discovery in mice that iron deficiency anemia during early pregnancy increases the risk of a baby being born with a congenital heart defect.
A disused sports pavilion is to be turned into a place of worship to cater for the needs of over 5,000 Hindus in Oxfordshire, who are said to have no place of their own in the entire county. The Oxford Hindu Temple and Community Centre project has had its plans approved to convert a building previously used for sports in Headington into a place where religious services can take place. A planning paper says, currently they have no place of their own in the entire county and they hire a community centre to run monthly communal religious services. This arrangement is suboptimal. The building is also to be inclusive and provide a secular community setting.
Wantage's MP has visited a Roman villa discovered through an archaeological dig at a housing development in Grove. David Johnston was invited to Brookside Meadows to see a range of archaeological finds, as well as the progress being made by home builders Barrett and David Wilson Homes. Brookside Meadows, situated on Denchworth Road in Grove, has been inhabited since the Bronze Age. It has a villa complex with painted plaster and mosaics and a hall-like aisled building. Construction at the property development, featuring a total of 83 homes, including 11 affordable ones, is well underway. To support biodiversity, the developers have pledged to ensure nature preservation on site. Brookside Meadows will feature hedgehog highways, swift bricks and bat bricks. The show home gardens are being created following RSPB Gold Standard to support wildlife. Mr. Johnson said, "I was delighted to be invited to take a tour of the recently uncovered Roman villa in Grove. It was great to see that they are uncovering the rest of it while safely removing and preserving the relics they have found, including coins, bones and pottery. It is an incredibly exciting find, and I really enjoyed my visit. Some of the artefacts found include a horse-headed belt buckle from AD 350 to 450, miniature votive axes, hundreds of coins, and Samian-style red-slip tableware." Campbell Gregg, Managing Director at Barrett and David Wilson Homes Southern, said, We're fascinated to learn of the site's rich heritage, and it's been fantastic to work with Red River Archaeology to share the news of the archaeological findings, which are of national and international interest. Another discovery is the assemblage of blank, tightly coiled lead scrolls that recall Roman curse tablets. Combined with findings like the miniature votive axes, they suggest a ritual or pilgrimage destination somewhere on the estate. Francesca Giarelli, project officer at Red River Archaeology Group, said the site is far more complex than a regular rural site and clearly was an important centre of activities for a long time, from the Bronze Age to the later Roman period.
An Oxford University academic has been named as one of the 10 early career academics who have been identified as some of the most promising and pioneering contributors in their fields. Dr. Jacob Downes, a Christchurch alumnus and currently a departmental lecturer in music, has been announced as the 2024 New Generation Thinker by the BBC and the UK Arts and Humanities Research Council. Every year, the BBC and the Council conduct a nationwide search for early career academics in the arts and humanities. These new generation thinkers are identified for having ideas that could engage and intrigue BBC radio listeners. After a process involving hundreds of applications, selected academics are given a chance to present their ideas on BBC Radio 4. The winners also receive training and support from the Arts and Humanities Research Council and BBC. Dr. Downes' research focuses on the experiences of musicians and listeners using sound technologies such as noise-cancelling headphones. His work brings together insights from the fields of sound studies, phenomenology, musicology, and music psychology. He said, "My research explores contemporary listening experiences, adopting a range of approaches from the scientific to the philosophical, to study perceptions of music and sound in both public and private spaces. For example, I explore how people use headphones to cushion themselves against the onslaught of contemporary life, what individuals are looking for when they listen to hours of whispered videos on YouTube, and why lots of us seem more and more to be choosing to play sound from our phones out loud on buses." It's fantastic to know the BBC and the Arts and Humanities Research Council appreciate the weirder end of humanities research and have made me a new generation thinker for 2024. Mr. Downes' journey started at Christchurch in 2012 when he joined to study music. He graduated with a first class BA in 2015, also bagging the Clifford Smith Prize in Music. Subsequently, he earned his MST with distinction from St. John's College, Oxford in 2016. Dr. Downes completed his PhD with no corrections at the University of Sheffield in 2021. After holding research positions at the universities of Cyprus and Sheffield, he returned to Oxford to serve as organising tutor in music at Lady Margaret Hall. He also serves as the chair of Oxford's Faculty of Music. He added, "I began my academic pursuits at Christchurch in 2012, where I spent three of the best years of my life so far. I thank Christchurch wholeheartedly for this continuing support." Christchurch congratulated Dr. Downes on his selection as a new generation thinker.
A retired oncologist from Oxfordshire left crowds at a railway station emotional as she played her wedding song on hit Channel 4 series The Piano. The contest, which was won by 13-year-old blind virtuoso Lucy Illingworth last year, follows amateur musicians sharing their stories and music with the public, performing to commuters in packed railway stations around the country. Host Claudia Winkleman and judges pop star Mika and pianist Lang Lang continued their search for brilliant pianists at London's Victoria Station. Claire from Oxfordshire played Liszt Consolation No. 3 in D flat major, which she had played at her wedding 8 months previously. "We only met about 8 months before that online, as you do," she said. She told Claudia she divorced 8 years ago after 25 years of marriage, as she and her husband had grown apart. "It turns your world upside down. It's like starting a new life, really," she said. "My daughters had gone off to college, and I was on my own for a few years. I thought it might be nice to find somebody. What do people do nowadays? They go online." After looking online, she found Dave, who is a beekeeper. He likes music, he sings in choirs, all the boxes being ticked. About 8 months after their first date, they decided to get married. Claire described her piece as calm, tranquil, and I played it for our wedding. A delighted Claudia said, "It's your song." "This can sometimes be really loud," said Claire. "This is a really lovely, beautiful piece of music, and it brings back memories of a really special day when we got married. I would encourage other people just to keep going. You know, sometimes you sort of give up and you think, oh, I won't find someone, but we found each other." Lang Lang and Mika praised Claire's very firm hands and agreed she's very good. Claire competed against a piano prodigy who left judges speechless and won the episode. Neurodivergent Michael, 23, shocked the judges with a rendition of his own composition, titled Great is the Grief. The words and the language used were completely made up. "There is no meaning there. The meaning instead is in the music and the voice," he told Claudia. Michael's stirring performance caused Lang Lang to describe him as a new Bach.
Newly approved design plans for a key city centre road have been described as a boondoggle of nonsense and all BS. Botley Road, one of the main routes into Oxford, has been shut for over a year as part of the £161 million project to allow for major improvements. Design plans for a new toucan crossing, raised side road entry treatments, shared use footway and cycle track and new crossing point were given the green light at Highways Chief Andrew Gant in a Transport Cabinet meeting on Thursday morning, the 23rd of May. The plans relate to ongoing work to provide a new western entrance to the city station for passengers and to replace the existing rail bridge. In Thursday's meeting, Mr. Gant referenced a consultation comment which called the proposal yet another ideologically motivated boondoggle of nonsense that wastes my money on pointless dreck, probably because you've figured out a way to skim off the contract. The highway chief said, "While you do have a democratic right to express your views through a consultation response, you are not entitled to accuse councillors or officers of a potentially criminal offence of corruption. So you have abused that right, I'm afraid." Another response referenced was one which responded to all aspects of the scheme as all BS. Mr. Gant said, "I can't incorporate what you think if you don't tell me what you think." It was acknowledged at the meeting there had been a lot of concern expressed in consultation responses about potential conflict between cyclists and pedestrians in the tunnel. This comes as fears and objections were raised that older and more vulnerable residents may be at risk due to the space being shared between cyclists and pedestrians. Mr. Gant said, "Some people are saying cyclists should be physically separated from pedestrians. In an ideal world, that would be better, but there simply isn't the space to do that." He added there were already many shared spaces in Oxford. "The fact is, it doesn't actually cause accidents, and it is a billion times better than what we've all been used to." As part of the new bridge, 2 4-metre-wide tunnels under the rail tracks will be provided, one on each side of Botley Road. The space would be shared equally between cyclists and pedestrians, with the area for each user group demarcated through the use of surfacing materials, markings and signage. On the north side of the Botley Road, from Cripley Road as far as Abbey Road, the existing footway would be converted to shared use as a footpath and cycleway. On the south side, from Mill Street to a point just opposite the eastern curb line of Abbey Road, the existing footway would be converted to shared use with cyclists. Other details covered in the key design plans include raised side road entry treatments and informal uncontrolled crossings.
Nature lovers are urging fellow wildlife fans to join a challenge aimed at helping the environment. The Barks, Bucks and Oxen Wildlife Trust is this weekend launching the 30 Days Wild project. The annual challenge, backed by wildlife trusts around the country, sees supporters carrying out a random act to engage with nature every day in June. Estelle Bailey, chief executive, said, "My top tips are to sit, walk, run, lie on the grass, look up, look down, fix on something, don't be afraid to touch or smell it, smile at the sun, throw your arms out in the rain, get wet, walk barefoot on grass, be in the moment." See bbowt.org.uk.
That's the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, please telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. That's 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition, and those from previous weeks, are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.